And this is why in Europe, we have set our objective to become the first carbon-neutral continent by 2050. This means leading an entire continent towards transitioning to clean energy, reinventing our infrastructure, and much, much more.
And much, much more. We just hear Ursula von der Leyen, President of the European Commission, explaining the necessity to move Europe into a new energy policy. And the question is, of course, what is that much, much more? And for that matter, we have invited Rogelio Calderón. He's a partner in Huasteca Venture and a lawyer by the University, Anáhuac University. He has an MBA from the University of Texas and IGADE Business School. He has more than 16 years experience working with the private sector in several countries such as Mexico and China. And he is here today to explain the complexities of the energy policy, specifically what is behind of this much, much more than the President of the European Commission just referred. Instead with us, yo soy César Vargas, and this is Futuros, the podcast of the Institute of International Policy. You're very welcome. Very well, Rogelio, thank you for being here. The first question, maybe the most obvious one for everyone, but still I consider necessary to hear your opinion on the importance of the energy sector in economic and geopolitical terms.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much for the invitation. It's very important because it's the foundation of economic growth in any country. Why? Because the energy sector, as you know, is not only about lighting my house or just charging my cell phone. So it's directly related to all industrial activity of a country. I think that the most important part of any economy is its ability to produce goods and to process raw materials into finished goods as well. So we have to understand the importance of energy as a source of well-being for all the population. I mean, because the population is not only about a single persons, but also about industry. Mm-hmm. And if you have the ability to produce goods with a cheap source of energy or a reliable source of energy, so you can create wealth and you can create well-being for all the people. It's also important in geopolitical terms because this has been a source of conflict ever since many, many decades ago, because there are countries that they do have the natural resources that throughout history we have seen that it's hydrocarbons, mm-hmm. natural gas, and crude oil, mm-hmm. which were the easiest way to produce electricity or to power transportation, for example. We know it has been a long history since we used steam based on coal and then moving to fossil fuels, mm-hmm. liquid fuels, meaning gasoline and diesel. And now we are transitioning into a cleaner matrix, power production matrix. It's not only about electricity. So certain countries, they do have such natural resources. Some others, they do not. Just like we have seen Japan and some other countries that they lack natural resources. Mm-hmm. So they mainly have to import natural gas, crude oil, coal, and some others, they are producers. You like Australia that produce a lot of coal. The United States, the United States used to be a energy dependent country 40, 50 years ago. So they were mainly importers, but then came some geopolitical conflicts, just like the crisis in the 1970s, some oil crisis, you know. So they decided just to stop being vulnerable, and they heavily invested in subsidies and some other incentives for their own companies within the United States. So then now after 40 years, 40 something years, now they can, they produce a lot of natural gas and crude oil and refined products like gasoline, petrol, and diesel.
To ensure we maintain this dominant position long into the future, we will never lose this position. My administration is announcing today that export authorizations for American liquefied natural gas can now be extended through the year 2050. Today, I'm taking another bold action to support energy jobs in Texas. In a few moments, I will sign four critical permits granting approval to vital pipeline and railway infrastructure on our nation's border. That's a big deal. This will include two permits allowing the export of Texas crude to Mexico, a giant victory for the workers of the state that you've been after for many years. Now it's your turn to help lead our nation to even greater heights. Today we give thanks for each and every one of you, and we are telling the Washington politicians trying to abolish American energy, don't mess with Texas.
So it has been a source of conflict always, because you have to secure the supply of such goods. Why? Because it's very important for everything that moves in a country. It's moved by energy, whether it's fossil or it's renewable. So we have to understand this very, very clearly. That energy is way beyond the forces in the market, way beyond good, the goodwill, way beyond many, many other competition. I mean, it's not only about competition, because you also have to secure for your own industry and for your own companies the supply of such fuels, if you want to say.
But before we continue with examples, just to sum up for our listeners, I think it's pretty clear now that the energy policy or the energy sector, it's not a typical commodity of the market. Often we can hear a very simplistic view on these commodities like oil and gas, and they try to see them or portray them or frame them as cakes, for example, like just supply demand, for example. But there's a lot of considerations here because of the dependency that the society, the nation has of the energy supplies. You cannot just let it to the forces of the market. It's just too risky to be without this important element for your production and your well-being. So it has an important political element. This is why also it's a source of conflicts.
In geopolitical terms also, it has been always a conflict because the countries that they do not have such resources, let's talk about lithium. Lithium, so it's very important for batteries. And it's the deposits are not only in the main producing countries of renewable technology. It's in countries that they are not producers of technology.
That's true, like Bolivia and Mexico, right? They just found huge mines of lithium, not mines, but sources of lithium, amounts of lithium.
Yes, it's... So we have always seen these geopolitical tensions because the countries, some countries, they want to secure, not always in a in a in a good and pacific way, the supply of such raw materials. Mm-hmm. And also natural gas and crude oil, that is an international market. So we have to understand that as key. Why? Because if a country produces raw materials, but they cannot process them, mm-hmm. so it's a big problem too. Because it's not only about having the resources, it's also being able to transform them into a different good. Let's say refining, that's mm-hmm. a process from crude oil into gasoline and diesel. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter if you have crude oil only, if you cannot process it. Mexico is saying that we have to migrate from only producing raw materials into processed goods or finished goods. This happened, for example, in Vietnam. Vietnam, many years ago, more than 10 years ago, they began with a strategy of producing internally even more than they import. So, and now they are a large producer of refined products, for example, mm-hmm. gasoline and diesel.
Okay.
So it was a little bit complicated at the beginning, but they managed, and now they are producing more internally instead of only importing.
Okay. I see. Very well, Rogelio. Could you provide more examples on the importance of the economic of the energy sector in the world?
Yes, there are so many examples, especially of conflicts coming from the energy sector. We have in Asia, the Spratly Islands, it's a reef. Now so many countries, they are claiming that such islands belong to their territory. But there's a lot of information about the existence of so many huge deposits of hydrocarbons, natural gas and crude oil. So that's one of the most important, if you want to say that, conflicts now. Also, the United States is there, of course. Why? Because there are so many allies, like Japan and some others, and China. China is also claiming such islands. So that's one. In Europe, well, one of the projects that has been all over the news is Nord Stream 2, mm-hmm. Nord Stream 2, which is a gas pipeline from Russia to Europe for bringing more natural gas into the region. Mm-hmm. So the United States is sanctioning some of the companies that they are building such pipelines under the argument that is not good for Europe and that it's against European energy security. Mm-hmm. And here, Europe also has its own stance. Some politicians, they say that is going to be good just to have an additional source of natural gas. Some others, they are saying that it's not because it can pose a threat or a risk if Europe control more of natural gas supply to Europe, and that's a conflict, ongoing conflict.
That's true. That recently, 1 week ago, the Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, just gave an interview on in the NATO installations, where he specifically said that the United States is going to impose sanctions on the companies that are building this pipeline.
And
Secretary Blinken, on the Nord Stream 2, I have to ask you about that, because obviously you've ruffled a lot of feathers in Germany with your comments saying that it will undermine Ukraine and you want the Europeans to stop it. But the pipeline is virtually done, 95%. Will you be willing to reach a compromise? You know, what's your take on that?
We've been very clear. President Biden's been very clear that he thinks that Nord Stream 2 is a bad idea and a bad deal for Europe, for us, for the alliance. It undermines basic EU principles in terms of energy security and energy independence. It, I think, poses a challenge to Ukraine, to Poland, to other countries that we care about. So I thought it was just very important for me to be able to say that directly and clearly to my friend Heiko Maas, so that there's no ambiguity. And the fact is, we have laws in the United States that require us to sanction companies that are materially helping to build the pipeline. So I just wanted to make sure that our partners understood our position on this and what we would need to do going forward. And so that's what we did.
Yes, yes, and yes, it has some political implications, but also we have to bear in mind that the United States is a big producer of gas and of liquefied natural gas. So it can also mean that if Russia exports more gas through this pipeline to Europe, there will be this amount of gas that the United States will not be able to sell to Europe as liquefied natural gas. So it has an economic component as well. And why? Because we have seen this, especially in Mexico. I will put an analogy. In Mexico, there was this idea also coming from the United States since decades ago, saying that Mexico should only import more diesel and gasoline from the United States instead of building new refineries. And this has happened all over the world, not only in Mexico, in Vietnam, and some other places. Why? Because we have to understand that for a producer, a large producer, if the potential clients, they start producing their own products or importing from a different source, there will be an amount of products that they will have to sell to a different client. So that can be something similar. I have heard that from some arguments from Europe and from the United States. So this is a complicated, not only economic, but political issue. The same have happened with some other pipelines in conflict, as they call them. TAPI pipeline, for example, that's also because here, beyond what I just mentioned, we have to understand also that maybe in the future, regionalization is going to become a trend instead of only globalization. What do I mean is, if you have a close source of natural gas, just like in Europe now, they have Leviathan, a big gas field in the Mediterranean, and some other discoveries in Africa, in Mozambique, for example, and some others, could be more feasible for Europe just to supply natural gas from such sources instead from the United States. Or United States saying that it's an ally and they will supply LNG to Europe. So it has a lot of different components here.
Okay, I see. Thank you for these examples, Rogelio. Also, when I was reading about this topic, often I found a concept that I would like you to ask you if you can clarify the concept for us. The concept is energy matrix. What is the energy matrix for a country?
Energy matrix means the different technologies or the different sources a country or a region uses to produce electricity, for example, mm-hmm. or to power their industry. I will talk about the electricity matrix. That is a good analogy, just to put an example. Electricity matrix in a given country or region is the different kind of technologies used to produce electricity. Mm-hmm. For example, Mexico has coal at 4%, it has hydro at, I don't remember, 16%, something like that. It has natural gas, most of natural gas, and some solar and some geothermal and wind. So that matrix is the one that produces electricity for the country. In Europe, they have also an energy matrix, mainly with coal, natural gas, nuclear, renewables as well. Mm-hmm. And here we have to understand there are two things that we have to bear in mind. That's the effective energy matrix, that is the technologies that they produce electricity at any given time, mm-hmm. and the installed energy matrix, installed capacity. So we also have installed capacity, that it's the power plants that they are there, but maybe they are not producing all time or throughout the year. As an example, and you can check this about the European Union in ENTSO-E. ENTSO-E is a platform mm-hmm. where they have, you can have access to information about the energy matrix installed and effective in Europe. So now in winter, I mean, a few months ago, it was a very, a terrible winter, not only in Europe, but also in the United States. Most of the electricity, or a lot of electricity produced in Europe, it came from coal, from nuclear, and from natural gas, not from renewables. So here we have to make that difference. Also, it's we have to understand that electricity consumed in a country, mm-hmm. it's made of the base load. That's the continuous electricity that is required for powering a grid or a system, and the peaks, that the peaks, they are up and down. It's mm-hmm. Electricity requirements that has something to do with production. I mean, if you are producing more, maybe you are consuming more electricity at certain moments, at certain months. Maybe seasonality of production of cars, for example, in Europe, or some other goods.
I see.
So it's the base load. The base load is the base for keeping the system alive, if you want to say that. Mm-hmm. And that it has been mainly, I mean, in many countries, 24/7, mm-hmm. 365 days a year, it has been from nuclear, coal, and natural gas. In Europe, for example, we have seen that they have installed a lot of clean energy. Mm-hmm. Parks, wind parks, and some others, but also countries like Germany with Datteln 4, that's a coal power plant, 1.1 gigawatts. That it was a commercial operation that it was last year, May or June, as far as I can remember.
Finland decided to get carbon neutral to the year 2035, but here in Germany, the Finnish state-owned company Fortum Uniper is going to put a new power plant to the grid. This is Datteln 4, as we say. It's one of the largest climate killers all over Europe.
With Datteln 4, we will definitely fail the Paris Agreement. Uniper and Fortum don't just burn coal, they also burn our future. And the Finnish state is a witness of this crime.
So, and some others also, like the UK, they just announced few months ago that they will require more natural gas power production, around 6 gigawatts. Mm-hmm. Why? Because we have to understand that it's not only about renewables. Renewables is one of the solutions, but energy transition will require also transition fuels. And now we have natural gas as one of the transition fuels that is cleaner than oil and some other technology than coal, of course. But it's also important to bear in mind that we cannot shift from one technology to other, just from one day to the next.
Yes, it's a process.
Exactly, it's a process. So some countries in just like Australia, they have decided to build huge storage facilities, electricity storage facilities. Mm-hmm. And some others like Germany is coal power plants. Some others importing electricity instead of producing within the country, just like Spain. Mm-hmm. Mexico producing more electricity with natural gas. Why? Because this base load is made of continuous, reliable electricity. And as long as some renewable technologies, they are immature, maybe in 20 or 30 years that they reach maturity and they become more efficient, that can change. But as of today, we still need of these transition fuels.
Okay.
Natural gas, again, is one of the favorites. Also in Africa. In Africa, we have seen a lot of projects for producing more natural gas or for importing liquefied natural gas. Also in Europe, in Greece, not only the gas pipelines that they are planned, just like Nord Stream and some Torx Stream also, but also from the Leviathan and from other sources from Africa. So if we see natural gas still, it's going to be around for some decades to go. Mm-hmm. It's not only about one solution. It's not only about installing wind farms or solar parks. But it will be little by little. Also in Mexico, we have seen that when we have heard from the government that we need a more rational a transition. I mean, it doesn't take 2, 3, 4, 5 years. Maybe in certain countries, maybe shifting to electric cars. It might happen in Europe, in the States, in some other countries, faster than in less developed countries like Africa, Latin America. Why? Because of the costs. The costs are still a little bit high. And it's not only about the cost, it's a second option. If you still have the option to buy a more efficient internal combustion vehicle, I mean, you will do it. Let's remember that not all the countries in the world, they have the ability to heavily subsidize such activities or that transition. I mean, Europe, they might be able to give a lot of money for build and subsidies to build renewable energy. But Africa and some others, I mean, we have not the ability to do it. So it will be in a slower pace. Mm-hmm. And that energy transition is going to happen all over the world.
Very well. Okay, Rogelio, some specialists have established that the change on the energy matrix is a key element in the fight against climate change. What is your opinion about it?
I think it's important. It's one of the elements for fighting climate change. It's not the only one that we have to consider. Mm-hmm. Why? Because pollution, it doesn't come only from power generation. Mm-hmm. as we have seen in so many documents. There's one document, for example, published by the European Union in this year. It's called something like CO2 emissions from fossil fuels for all countries in the world. So there, if we can, I mean, if we read it, we will see that, that CO2 and greenhouse gases, they are not only produced by my power production facilities. So the energy matrix, of course, it has to change, I think, but it has to change a little by little, because we cannot just move to immature technologies when we have, as we mentioned before, the base load and the peaks of any energy system. So the matrix has to shift to cleaner technologies, but also we have to work on restoring the environment, in reforestation, in producing less trash, using less plastic. I mean, it's a combination. It's a, it has to be a combination of factors and solutions, especially because I have seen that so many people think, or some documents they propose, that we only should shift the energy matrix in order to stop global warming, which I don't think is true, because I will put some examples. We have to think about the correlation between the energy matrix of a given country or a given region and the production of CO2. For example, Iceland and Canada, they use more renewable technologies than Mexico, but they produce more CO2 than Mexico. So per person, Canada produces 16, a little bit more than 16 tons of CO2 per year per person. And Iceland produces 11 point something tons of CO2 per person per year, and Mexico 3.87. So we have to think also if there's a correlation between greenhouse gases production and the energy matrix. So it's not, that's what I think is a key element, but not the only consideration that we have to bear in mind. So many people, they only think about CO2, the production of CO2 within a region or within a country. But there's also imported CO2 and exported CO2. Australia, for example, exports a lot of coal. England exports a lot of coal as well. So they export a lot of CO2. And Europe or Mexico or the States, we import a lot of goods from China. So that's imported CO2, because such goods, they had to be produced in China or in India or in Indonesia. And they produce CO2 within that country, but we are using or we are buying such products. So it's not only about producing less less CO2 or less greenhouse gases within my country. So, because that's very misleading. We think that, okay, if we only produce less greenhouse gases, we will be better off. No, why? Because many decades ago, United States and Europe, they used to produce a lot of steel, they used to produce a lot of vehicles, basic goods, I don't know, tables, chairs, so many things. But now they are not producing the same amount of goods that they require energy to be transformed. So now we are importing such CO2.
I see.
So it's a little bit more complex.
In just 250 years, a very short time span compared to the Earth's history,
humans have increased the quantity of CO2 in the atmosphere by around 40%. This is an alarming amount, bringing us to levels last seen on Earth 4 million years ago. The consequence is increasing warming of the Earth's atmosphere. Since 1750, the temperature on Earth has increased on average by 1 degree Celsius. If we continue like this, the CO2 content of the atmosphere will double, if not triple, in the next 100 years. The Earth will then heat up by a further 3 to 4 degrees.
I understand your point that because energy policy, as we mentioned in the beginning, is very complex. You have to consider elements beyond the market elements. There are political elements, there are security elements. And I would like to talk a little bit about this last one, the security elements. For example, in the case of China and also Europe, I have read that these regions, well, the country, China, and the region of Europe, it's vulnerable on the energy supply because they lack of natural resources. Do you share these considerations?
Yes, I think that's a very important thing to take into account. China is now that it's growing exponentially since a couple of decades ago, they need more energy just to process and produce the goods that they are consuming in other parts of the world. And also Europe used to have a lot of gas production in Netherlands mainly, but they have been net importers of natural gas in general, all the European Union, not for refined products, but for natural gas for the industry beyond power production, as we mentioned before. And China is also, the same is happening in China. But now China and Europe, they have a different approach to become less vulnerable to disruptions in the supply. So China is now in some agreements with Russia, and they built some pipelines just to transporting natural gas from Russia. That is a large producer of natural gas, as we know, not only in the Arctic, Siberia, and some other parts of the country, and also in China. And China is taking a mixed approach. So they are importing more from Russia, and they are importing LNG also from the United States, crude oil as well. Mm-hmm. But they are also incentivizing internal production of natural gas, of crude oil, and some other raw materials. Then they are also increasing the refining capacity. So they are building a lot of new refining facilities. The United States used to be the main refiner in the world. Now it's the second largest, just behind China. Why? Because China, they don't want to only import the fuels. They want to produce them within the country. And for that, they have also secured long-term agreements for crude oil with Saudi Arabia and some other regions. Natural gas, again, from the United States, from Qatar, and from other countries. So I think they are moving forward to a mixed strategy just for decrease the vulnerability that they have, just in case, I mean, they cannot source for any reason natural gas from the United States or from Qatar or from Russia. So they have diversified their energy supply. And Europe is doing the same. I mean, since a long time ago. Mm-hmm. So they are trying to diversify now more Russian gas, gas from Leviathan, gas from Egypt, and gas from United States, and some natural gas that is produced in Europe as well. So I think the vulnerability is if they just do not diversify their supply sources of natural gas. I mean, crude oil, they still have some good sources in the North Sea, but they have to diversify. And that's something, that's a tendency around the world, the same as petrochemical complexes. We don't have to forget the petrochemical industry, because that's for plastics, for so many goods that they are produced from petrochemicals. Also, China is producing more petrochemicals within the country.
Yes. This that you mentioned, I think is very important. Often when we talk about energy, I feel that in the minds of the people, it's only transportation energy, like for the cars. But often we forgot that oil and is used to produce plastics and a lot of things.
Yeah, it's way beyond transportation and way beyond electricity in my house. Mm-hmm. So we also have to bear in mind that with this we might see a change in from globalization to regionalization. It's more about sourcing the goods closer to the consumption center. Mm-hmm. And globalization is more about a real huge international market. Now we are also seeing a trend that globalization, it used to propose that it was at some point for some countries, it was better and cheaper to import instead of produce internally. Mm-hmm. Some goods. Of course, that's true if you are the producer, if you are the producing company or the producing country. But it's not the same when you are just a net importer, just like Mexico now, with natural gas or with fuel, gasoline and diesel. But when you are the producer, of course, that's the best option. But now we are seeing different, as we talk about China doesn't want just only importing energy or hydrocarbons. The same for Europe. Europe is different. So Europe do not want just to import from one single source or from one country. So they want a diversification of the supply.
Okay.
That's something to bear in mind.
And in terms of solar, you know, building a solar farm is a lot like building any other kind of farm. You have to clear the whole area of wildlife. Over time, it gradually struck me that there was really no amount of technological innovation that was gonna make the sun shine more regularly or wind blow more reliably. In fact, nothing could, you could make solar panels cheaper, you could make wind turbines bigger, but sunlight and wind are just really dilute fuels. And in order to produce significant amounts of electricity, you just have to cover a very large landmass with them. In other words, all of the major problems with renewables aren't technical, they're natural.
Okay, Rogelio, thank you very much. Could you explain to our listeners the concept of transition energy sources? Could you provide also some examples? I hear already that you mentioned that natural gas can be one of these transition energy sources. Could you go further on this topic, please?
Yes, transition fuels, it will be just like natural gas, that is now the most popular. We have to understand that transition throughout history, humankind, we have went through different transitions. First, it was, in the modern modern era. Mm-hmm. It was from steam, coal, gasoline, diesel, natural gas, and now into cleaner technologies or cleaner sources, just like wind, solar, and so on. So for transitioning from one to the other, so we need something that is still a mature technology, a mature a source of a reliable and continuous power, let's say, for electricity, that is natural gas. Natural gas, it has been since a long time ago, an energy and a fuel. It's not only for power production, but also for industrial production. They are well known and they are somehow cheaper than new technologies. I will put an example just with hydrogen. Hydrogen is considered one of the fuels of the future. Mm-hmm. But we have to think also that the changing costs of technology working on natural gas or on fuels, gasoline and diesel, into those that they use hydrogen is very expensive. It's going to be very expensive. So it's not only that we are going to start using, I don't know, planes and cars and everything that use hydrogen, maybe in certain countries again. But let's think about the tractors that you use for in the plantations. Mm-hmm. All over the world, they run on diesel or they run on gasoline or they run on some of them natural gas, maybe. But just to change and dispose all of such technologies, all of such tractors for using hydrogen, it will be very, very, very expensive. So that's the reason why we need a transition fuel.
I see.
We need something that closes the gap and that it helps us, of course, to change all the technology, all the industrial processes that they use natural gas, mm-hmm. or they use coal, maybe to natural gas, and then to other source. But it's not as simple just as saying, oh yes, now we are going to use only renewable. No, in certain parts, of course, it's going to be faster than in the others. But we need to go little by little. As long as, and this is natural, all technology, they have to mature little by little. So in the meantime, mm-hmm. we will have to use natural gas. And natural gas is cheap somehow, and is abundant all over the world. And so many countries they produce, and it doesn't need such a complex process or expensive process for producing it, just like hydrogen as of today. Mm-hmm. So drilling is a technology that it has been, and fracking, both are technologies that they have been around for so many decades.
I see.
So yeah, that's my idea why it should be a transition fuel.
All right. Okay, Rogelio, so to start to close this episode, could you share which are, in your opinion, the key elements that anyone who wants to follow the policy energy in their country need to put attention on? I mean, if we have, because this podcast is being listened in Belgium, in the United States, in Colombia, in Mexico. So for our listeners in these countries that they want to follow their policy energy in their countries or in the world, which are the main, where they should put their attention on?
I think that first of all, they need to study and to analyze the history of each country. Mm-hmm. There are no, I mean, two countries, they cannot be the same, and they cannot be doing the same as other countries. There's no that copy-paste idea. We should probably erase it from our minds. So it's not that such countries doing that, so we will have to do exactly the same because our reality is different. So we have to focus on the reality of each country and the history because every result comes from the past. That theory of the spontaneous generation, I mean, is not valid anymore. So what is happening today, it had to do something to do with the past several years or several decades. So first, we have to understand that. Second, we have to pay attention to all the variables, not only about CO2, for example, that is produced within a country, as we mentioned before, but also, okay, imported, I mean, all the variables and the production matrix is also important because, and not only about power generation and not only about one single thing. So for example, when we talk about deforestation, we think about the Amazonia, yes, but deforestation is happening all over, and it has happened all over the world, not only the Amazonia. And the Amazonia, it might be the lung of the world, yes, but if we contribute a little bit more with deforestation in other parts of the country, of the world, so we can also help the Amazonia to produce more oxygen. And also we have to see the political tendencies around the world, because at the end, most of the decisions, they are made by politicians, but also the persons like you and me, that we are not into politics. And for example, I said I had never been a public officer working in the government. We can also propose something to our politicians, but based on the full picture. Of course, we want to do something for our country and for the environment and for stopping global warming, but we have to be a little bit more objective.
I may disappoint you, but I do not share everyone's enthusiasm about Greta Thunberg's speech. Nobody explained to Greta that the modern world is complicated and complex. It changes fast. People in Africa and in many Asian countries want to be as wealthy as people in Sweden. How can it be done? By making them use solar energy, which is plentiful in Africa? Has anyone explained the cost of it?
So the third will be to be objective. And trying to propose realistic solutions beyond just one simple solution, or that we say, oh, this is the panacea. And with this, we are going to be better off. And maybe visiting the country, visiting a country, it's important when you want to talk about such country. So especially because, again, not all countries are the same and not all systems are the same. When we talk about the reality, electric grids or the necessities, the needs of a country, or this energy security concepts are not the same for my country than for other country. So that reality is, so we have to think about that because we have seen a lot of propaganda around the world that says, oh yes, we have to do the same that, I don't know, that other country just installing floating solar parks, but also hydrogen, or but also, I don't know, so many solutions that we sometimes think that it's only about copying, pasting, and it's not, and it's not like that. Finally, I think to see how the production, has changed from one country to the other. Now, as I say, Europe and the States, they used to produce a lot of tangible goods, mm-hmm. let's say steel and others. But now such production is in China, in Southeast Asia, and in some other countries. So they also produce CO2 for the goods that I use every day. Nice. So we have to bear that in mind as well. And just to be very careful with absolute opinions or saying, oh, this is it, and there's nothing beyond.
Very well. Thank you very much, Rogelio, for these very specific recommendations on how to keep following the energy policy in a country or a region or even globally. That will be all for us. I don't know if you have a last thought that you would like to share with our listeners.
Yes. At the end, all the solutions and all the problems and all the documents, they have different implications. Mm-hmm. So we have to understand that very clearly, and we have to pay attention. Okay, this might have a political interest, and this might have different interests. I mean, in our recommendations and all the proposals that we make, we might want to do something in the faster way, but sometimes it's not the best way. We have, and we have to think about that it's a transition. The transition is little by little. Mm-hmm. So there's no an absolute solution. We have to think what is going to happen in the future. I always say that all technologies, new technologies and old technologies, they have a disposal cost. So we have to think that everything that is not organic, it's a potential trash in the future. Because again, panaceas do not exist. There's always interest involved. And we have to reach an equilibrium and just to try to do the best for our world, for each country, and for our industry, because we will still need to produce goods, I mean, for our well-being.
All right. Thank you very much, Rogelio. That will be all for us. And we hope to continue listening to hear more from you. Next week, we have the episode on Mexico. We're going to go specifically in the case of Mexico. We're going to discuss what has happened in the last years, specifically since 2013, when an energetic reform had place. And now things apparently, the wind start to blow in other direction. So please don't miss the next episode of Futuros, where we're going to continue having Rogelio with us and his specialist view on energy policy, but in the case of Mexico. Thank you very much for being here, Rogelio.
Thank you. Gracias.
Thank you very much. That will be all for us. We hope to see you here next week. Before I go, I want to give you a cultural recommendation so you can stay at home with nice content. And this is a TED Talk named Why Renewables Can Save the Planet. It's a TED Talk of Michael Schellenberg. It's a very interesting if you want to go deeper on this topic about energy policy. See you next week. Please keep safe, keep warm. See you soon. Se apaga.